What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar. This is our CES 2026 preview. Joining me for it is podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Once again, not going to CES, but I'm holding down the fort at home, getting everybody's audio from the show floor.
Which is, frankly, probably a much better CES experience, Ben. I'm not a fan of Vegas. I'm not a fan of like doing this, but it is cool to see the tech in person. And I think that's the main draw. So we're going to be talking about all the stuff we expect to see at CES 2026. I guess when you're seeing this, in a couple days. But yeah, we're going to dive into some of the things we're expecting from the show this year. As always, if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. And, you know, we do live streams. We'll do a live stream like once CES is over. We'll do it typically around Thursday mornings at 10:30 a.m. Eastern. Join us then, and we'll have some stuff from CES too. So go, watch our social channels, check out our TikToks and all that fun stuff. We're going to drop a lot of stuff out of CES. So it's going to be another year at CES, and we know what the show is, right? It is TVs. It is a lot of new computer tech. That's basically the whole thing. Smart glasses is one of the main trends from 2025 leading into 2026. So we're going to see a lot about that. I think that's it, right? We get some transportation stuff. We don't see as many cars at CES as we used to. We're not going to see as many huge keynotes as we used to. I believe Lenovo is the one doing the keynote in the Sphere this year. They are, I believe, the company shipping the most PCs these days. So I guess that makes sense. But it's going to be more
Devinder,
of the same.
Correct me if I'm wrong, yeah. But is it that the pandemic lockdown and the fact that CES was canceled and or diminished for a couple of years just broke the consensus of everybody do everything right there? And like Samsung and like all these other companies realized, hey, we can get like huge like pops of PR by just doing our own Apple style announcements.
I think,
and not getting lost in like the noise of a big tech show.
The pandemic certainly did that, but Samsung also, I think even before the pandemic, was like doing stuff after CES, like a couple weeks after, just to like own their own space. So all these companies are really worried about who's paying attention to them, right? Like, is their marketing actually going to be useful? And it turns out launching something in the middle of CES, there's good and bad to it, right? It is a crowded event. There's a ton of news happening. You may not get that isolated attention you want from audiences and the press. If you do something on your own, you get that. And actually, it's probably going to be cheaper to produce, especially if it's a virtual launch event or launch stream or something. So I think that's what a lot of companies saw. And Samsung reoriented around that pretty well. I think CES is getting back to where it was. A lot of sites, like last year, most people from Engadget went, we spent basically the couple years before that, like with a really diminished team on the ground. But I think things are back to normal. At the very least, the pandemic proved that you got to wear that mask, at least at CES. You got to wash your hands all the time. I think it was around like 2015 after I'd gone to CES a couple years. I was like, you know what? I'm not shaking hands. I'm not shaking hands at this show. And I didn't get sick at CES since then. So that was a big thing. You know,
hand washing is technically technology, but let's talk about real technology. Let's talk about the TVs.
Let's talk about the TVs. And I think the big thing we're going to be hearing about, and it's stuff we've already seen because LG has already rolled out its technology. I believe we'll see some announcements from Sony and others, but micro RGB is going to be the big new thing coming. It has more colors and better dimming than a regular LED backlit LCD TV. It's kind of an evolution of micro LED. And micro LED was interesting because, mini LED. And it's kind of cool because we have a good description of it here. From Engadget, from Anna Washenko, micro RGB is a newer screen technology where rather than white lights, the backlight can be any hue thanks to individually controlled red, green, and blue micro LEDs offering a wider color array. This approach is the midway point between the precision of OLED with its individual pixel lighting, but it offers an upgrade over screens only using mini LEDs. Now, we've talked about mini LEDs before, and I've really liked mini LED TVs because they've generally been cheaper than OLEDs. They can get brighter than OLEDs. And the whole thing about them is that they have a lot of backlighting zones, which allows them to be a little more precise about brightness and darkness and things like that. So they don't look as great as an OLED overall, but it's close. And they work really well in bright rooms, and a lot of OLEDs don't because they don't get super bright. So we see this technology from LG. Sony has already announced that it's having its own version of it coming. Basically, slightly better micro mini LEDs with new, more color accurate stuff, maybe brighter screens. This is where it gets confusing because this is not related to micro LEDs. Micro LEDs is like a whole other technology, and I believe that's the thing that's going to be coming after OLED.
So, mm-hmm. What would you purchase now?
I mean, don't buy a TV right now. Black Friday was the time to buy a TV, so it is a couple of weeks before, unless you see like an incredible deal. OLED is still the best if you can get, especially one of the new QD OLEDs, which have the quantum dot layer, which help with color reproduction stuff. QD OLED is like top of the line of what you can get for OLED right now. Mini LED TVs are everywhere. They're also often going on sale. Those look really good, and you get more bang for your buck with mini LED. But I have to say, I have an OLED TV from 2016, which ended up in my bedroom because we have nowhere else to put it. I still sometimes stop and just look at that screen and be like, man, look at that contrast. Look at that color reproduction. Like, and also because of the way OLED screens work, like it's almost as if the content is painted directly on the screen. Whereas with mini LEDs and LED TVs, like there's layers. Like there's layers of glass between it. It doesn't feel as immediate. So OLED has always been kind of an incredible technology. We always had to worry about burn-in.
OLED is something that I still covet, but I'm thinking about like getting some kind of screen setup or some kind of media viewing setup for my bedroom. The way that my bedroom is set up, the only thing that really makes sense, like there's a possibility that I could put it behind where I'm sitting right now. Audio listeners can't understand, but I'm pointing toward a great white expanse behind me. What I would rather do is I would rather put posters back here, both for being like an interesting Zoom and video call background, and also not to have just like a big black square instead of this great white expanse. So the other big possibility for being able to watch something would be like right by my bed. So now I'm thinking about projectors.
Yeah.
Any projectors at CES or...
There likely will be. We haven't seen any in our preview piece, but CES is a good time to debut projectors. Usually Sony will show off its latest ultra short throw technology. Samsung has had a whole bunch of projectors. Anker has also been doing like some great portable projectors. You may want to look at some of the Anker stuff, Ben. Like some of them are like small, like the size of like a soda can. And it's not going to be the best image of the world, but if you just want to veg and watch a TV show in bed, like it may be fine. But if you step up a bit and you have like blank wall space,
then I've got so much blank wall space.
Then you can start cooking. You know, like maybe you could project right onto the wall, but also you could eventually get like a rolly screen or a screen like that just you mount on the wall that gets you better brightness, like better color bouncing and stuff like that.
You know, there's like a specific kind of paint that you can use.
They say that. It's walls are not flat. Let me put this out there.
Yeah, it's true.
Walls are rarely, especially walls in New York apartment buildings, they're never fully flush. They're never fully flat. So there are weird deformities you see when you project right onto a wall. If it doesn't matter to you, then, you know, not a huge deal. But most often, you are better off just putting the money you would spend painting that wall to just get like a dedicated screen. Just like get a screen or hang a sheet or something that is a reflective material rather than the wall, which will never be flat. But I like projectors. Steve Dent wrote a piece about why 2025 was a good year for projectors and why we're still paying attention to them. Yeah.
So then we have the inevitability that the PC industry is going to be hurting because of RAM prices. But we also talked about this with Will Smith a couple of weeks ago about how the big PC makers have already put in their orders. So it's not a question of whether or not the new like Dell laptops this year are going to be able to, you can spec them out with all the RAM you want. It's how expensive that end price is going to be, right?
Yes, that's absolutely it. And I will say, I've talked to a couple big PC companies and nobody is talking about RAM right now. As soon as I bring it up, they're like, that is the, that's the scarlet letter. That's the thing we will never refer to, basically. Like, it is a, right now, they have nothing to say about how they will price RAM, how they're thinking about RAM. I think that's going to be a big thing going into CES and into 2026, really, because not only are we dealing with tariffs and stuff for electronics, but RAM is everywhere. It's going to be powering computers. RAM is in SSDs, as Will Smith had mentioned. So we could see storage prices rising as part of that, too. It's going to be a huge deal. We don't know exactly how big, and we don't know, maybe the RAM suppliers can like crank up production, but it really takes a long time because it's only a handful of companies making RAM. Maybe there will be some sort of solution by 2026, but it doesn't seem like it. So it's a weird thing. It's a weird time we're going into, especially in an event where I think they're trying to really highlight like what the best of what the tech world can do. They're going in really... in a weak space because we don't know what's going to be happening with RAM. One thing we saw a lot of last year was also AI PCs. And I was going to mention like 2025, not really the year of AI PCs as they thought it was. Go read my piece about Copilot AI PCs and why that whole thing kind of fizzled. It's weird because everything is kind of becoming an AI PC because Intel and AMD's chips and Apple's chips have the MPUs. They have onboard processing for AI. It's just that the killer features that they have been promising are not here. Windows Recall, Microsoft Recall is not that great. It is out on some computers if you have it. It's cool that you can go back in time and see what was on your screen last week or whatever, but I have not found that database to be really useful. They have launched some Copilot voice control features, which sometimes tap into the MPU. Those don't work very well.
Did you see this headline? I'm seeing it on Yahoo Tech, plug-in for the parent company. But it's a extreme tech like syndication that says, Microsoft scales back AI goals because almost nobody is using Copilot. And it mentions that in some cases, Microsoft has cut its sales goals by 50% because of how few people are using agentic AI in big quotation marks.
Yeah, exactly what we've been saying for the past year.
The idea of agentic AI is not here yet. It's something that they are cooking toward. I think we all know what an AI agent could possibly be, if especially if you're a sci-fi fan, but we are so far away from it.
They need to stop like announcing things before before they're fully cooked. Like that's what got Apple in so much trouble. People are really pissed off about the idea of Windows becoming an agentic AI system because a lot of that means your computer will essentially become non-deterministic, right? It's going to start doing things on its own. They've highlighted some previews where they've said like they will eventually test something where you could send the Copilot agent to go do a job for you while you do other stuff on your computer. I don't know if I could trust that. And in their own warnings for agentic stuff in Windows, Microsoft was like, hey, by the way, this thing could install malware in your system. So just FYI, be careful. You're the one giving me the feature. You're the one launching this. Don't warn me about a bad thing it can do because you have not solved that potential vulnerability. Like, don't release the product at that point. I don't think they've learned yet. I've talked to a couple of reps from major PC companies, Ben, who are seething about what Microsoft is doing because they love computers. They love like being able to like set up their OS to do exactly what they want. And this AI stuff, we don't know. There's a lot of things we don't know. Like, will it change your settings? Will it like, when you send it to go do a task, will it do something else in your system when you open up those permissions? We don't know. Non-deterministic PCs. Yeah.
So what you're saying is that these folks are the sort who really like being able to set up a PC to do exactly what they want.
Yes.
And Microsoft doing this takes more power out of the hands of a user who actually knows what they're doing, which, I don't know, could push more people toward Linux. The year of Linux has always been coming up. It could be 2026.
Yeah. Go check out Will and Brad Made a Tech Pod, by the way, because I love their conversations. But as Will Smith told us, like, he is really into Linux right now. One thing I've noticed about myself is that I am actually not super... I'm not like hardcore about what I'm doing in my operating systems. It's just, I want it to work. I want to understand the file structures. I want to understand drivers. I don't want the drivers to crash. I have lived through the horrors of Windows 95, of Windows 3.1, of Windows XP. I was in IT during the Windows XP era, and like, I would just walk around campus with a boot disk and a Windows repair disk because I would just like run into things and like, okay, I guess I got to reinstall this computer. I guess I have to boot Windows XP into safe mode and run this file command every single day. It was a nightmare. So Windows 11, there are potential issues with it. I don't like the way they've like pushed people out of Windows 10, but for the most part, Windows 11 just works and it doesn't bother me. Right. But as they start to push in this, the agentic AI stuff, I don't know. I'm not going to feel too good about that personally. I won't use those features. I think that's the main way I'll be thinking about it. But it's not like, I don't know if I'll gain much by going to Linux personally. But I guess the future of what the PC industry decides to do determines all of this too. And also like maybe pushes me more to Macs.
I've been thinking about this for the last few weeks. If anybody says in 2026 that year had been the year of Linux, mm-hmm. it might be because the Steam machine did well. And it's the idea of like, so many people are using Linux, but like, let's be real, not everyone knows that they're really using Linux. Mm-hmm. They're just using this cool new thing that lets you use all your Steam games. Well, and it happens to be running Linux.
That's where it gets tricky, right? Because if you buy a Steam Deck, eventually you will find a reason to boot that into desktop mode to install something or whatever. And at that point, you're in Linux, baby. That's a Linux desktop. It's Linux commands you're running, a Linux file structure. Like, so even the people who get the Steam machines, it's not like an Xbox, Ben, where it's like, it's all like in the background and you never see it. You're always one button away from the pure Linux environment in the Steam machines. Like that's the ideal of having a fully open machine. And that could point more people to be like, I'm going to dabble around this desktop. I'm going to hack a way to get this app working, which is not officially supported in Steam, which is how people got shortcuts to stuff like Xbox Cloud Streaming going on the Steam Deck early on. So it is weird. It could end up being the year of Linux. I would argue the whole push towards Android, which is based on the Linux kernel, that got people into Linux. They never have to touch Linux, but it's kind of there. macOS has a lot of like command stuff you could be doing that makes it feel like a Linux system too. I think how I'm feeling is like if Microsoft keeps stirring this up, it's like it's up to Apple to have like the one good remaining consumer OS, assuming they don't screw that up with AI. Hopefully they don't. It's a weird situation we're in. While we're on this topic, we're definitely going to see more AI PCs talked about at CES. And the thing, like I've been saying, everything is becoming an AI PC. We're going to get new chips from AMD and Intel. We'll likely see some new hardware from NVIDIA, although I think the rumors are they delayed the supercards that they were planning to introduce. So AI capabilities will be here. We don't know when the AI features will be truly useful and functional. I'll tell you guys how I use AI today, right? Like I will occasionally search something in Copilot just to be like, can you compile a table of this? Let me double check this thing real quick before I go double check those specs. I use it in that fashion, but I use Descript a lot to transcribe things. And if I was only using my Mac, I could use Mac Whisper to do that. I could use onboard local things. We're going to see more PC things that could do that sort of decoding on board. I love when I'm in talking with somebody and taking notes, like to have live transcription going too. That could be powered by AI and NPU stuff. Evernote has added that when you like record stuff within Evernote. It doesn't use your NPU there. We have a weird mix of devices using cloud-based AI execution and stuff happening on device. That's why Microsoft is like everything is an AI PC now. Every Windows 11 PC is an AI PC. Even there, like going back from the AI stuff. So you won't hear people really championing the term AI PC, I think, at CES, but it's going to happen eventually because the hardware is just getting better. It is worrying. I think everyone's a little worried and everyone's kind of pissed off at Microsoft about pushing this stuff into Windows and not fully thinking about like the implications of it. So that's the main thing I'm seeing. I don't know. How do you feel about AI PCs at this point, Ben?
We're not saying anything new. We're saying it's another clippy. We're saying that like it's not super useful. I don't know if I have anything to say about AI specific PCs because
are you using AI features yet? Like you have access to things.
Unquestionably. Yeah. I use Mac Whisper all the time. Yes. I feel like I'm going to come back to another one of my hobby horses, which is that if you interact with like an AI system in the next 12 months or so, and you're not one of those people who like asks ChatGPT about anything and everything, no judgment in that specific statement, it's probably going to be because maybe Siri got smarter at some point, or Alexa got smarter, or you know, somebody released a car with a smarter voice assistant that allows you to like do more things. That's the sort of thing that LLMs are good at right now. And that's a great thing to do. It's just really weird to me that so much of the development brain power is going toward making some kind of pie in the sky, we can do absolutely everything with AI, when like all of the researchers say, hey, LLMs are good at like a few specific things. Why aren't we developing toward these few specific things? So I'm going to keep on using them for the things that they're best at. A thing that I would not do, and I would not trust an AI PC to help me with, is I've always wanted to get around TurboTax. And so for the last several years, I've been homebrewing a spreadsheet that helps me tabulate my taxes, especially because I do quarterly taxes as a freelancer. I would not let a AI PC just make something for me.
Yeah.
Or if I did, I would then take it to one of my friends who's very smart at Excel and have them tear it down to the studs and make sure that everything is sound, because that is the sort of thing that's making financial decisions or helping me make financial decisions, versus just like some little thing where I needed to get a bunch of cells to fill out in a certain way, you know?
Yeah. Low stakes is key. I think low stakes is absolutely key. I actually have done that recently too with Copilot. I was just like, hey, I need a spreadsheet to fill out this kind of data. How should I format this thing just to give me an idea? And that's cool to have like a thing that you can bounce stuff like that off of and get you back something. I like to treat them like a little minion, like minion, fetch me this. How does this work? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Go away, minion. Don't talk to me anymore.
And yeah, in the chat, Tom Rogers says, exactly, low stakes is where it should be. In my master's program, I used a chatbot to find references and give me footnotes. I go back and check it.
That's the key.
Precisely. If you put in like a bunch of books and you say, please like put this in MLA or APA or whatever formatting, that's a perfect use of AI. Don't use AI to write your paper. You don't learn anything. We have to get to other stuff. Let's just imagine that I did a good segue to smart glasses.
I mean,
tell me more about smart glasses.
Speaking of things that are kind of troubling and also shiny new tech, like the tech world is getting desperate. I feel like they're like, I don't know, what's new? AI PCs, AI, everything AI, right? AI on your eyes, AI eyes, smart glasses. That's what they're doing essentially, like smart glasses.
I wouldn't call this a desperation thing. I would also call it like, I don't know. They're just they're doing stuff.
They're doing stuff, but
I don't remember if it was this year or late last year when people were all saying like they're just in the arena trying things.
Yeah.
But like I'm in support of this. I want to make sure that this show is not like, it is tech critical, but it is not like everything sucks.
I'm not saying everything sucks.
So yeah, show me the smart glasses, especially if you can promise me that the smart glasses aren't just going to beam ads directly to my eyes.
They can't promise you that, Ben. They can't promise you that. So back to everything sucking. these are AI devices, like the specifically the things I'm talking about, like what Meta is planning to do. The Meta Ray-Ban displays right now, the glasses that are out right now that have like a display in a single eye. You could talk to the Meta Assistant or whatever. They're relying on AI processing in the cloud for everything, for language translation, for whatever. They're taking the data and building stuff off of it too, which adds to your Meta advertising profile or whatever. So we're going to see a lot of smart glasses at CES, and certainly like the companies building technology for smart glasses. The real question I think we need to keep asking is, to what end? And smart glasses as an AI device is not something I can really get behind. Have you noticed like how people are getting really mad about even people even wearing the Ray-Ban glasses right now that have the cameras in them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
People are saying, no, thank you. Like, it's getting at times potentially
I mentioned physical. That I like almost became one of those glass holes recently, right?
No, I didn't. I didn't like, hear that.
I got really close to it because I would go to the park and I would just like, I had like these bubble wands, and I noticed that people really loved seeing the bubbles from the bubble wands. Mm-hmm. And I was like, unfortunately, the internet in my brain says this is great content. Like, what if I was just wearing Meta smart glasses or something and like took videos and like edited those into something? Yeah. And there has been a huge backlash to that. People doing restaurant reviews and not telling the restaurant workers that they're being recorded. Like, I'm very happy that I took a pause on that.
Yes.
And then didn't end up doing it because I very easily could have ended up as one of those people.
I mean, it's on the, again, seems cool on the surface. Let Meta try out some things, but to what end is Meta doing this with the Ray-Bans? It's because they want a world where you're always producing content, and also you're always talking to the Meta Assistant, and also people are always surveilled in a way too. And I've seen instances where bars and some clubs are like not letting people in who are wearing those things visibly, right? And it's really hard to be like, hey, man, it's off. I'm not going to be recording, because you could just put a little piece of tape over the LED indicator. And
you can put a little piece of tape on it. I saw a thing in 404 Media that you could buy like a $15 thing that like lets you get around the recording light.
Yeah. Deepro9, our resident AI fan in the chat, says they will get over it. Do it, Ben. Awesome, Luddites. Cameras already everywhere. Why aren't you allowed to have your personal perspective of the event that happened when it goes down? You could do that right now. You have to take out your phone and do that. The thing that these glasses are, and that have been made illegal in many different places, is spy glasses. They are replacing the spy glasses, which, if you have a camera and you walk into a Disney bathroom at a Disney park or something, somebody can complain about that and get you banned from Disney for life, because there are freaking perverts out there doing gross stuff. So putting it right on your face is just makes it a little more convenient. So that's essentially what this upgraded technology is. It's not about Luddetry, and the Luddites were not wrong either. The Luddites were complaining about machines coming in and basically devaluing their labor. Like, they had a point.
I think we actually need to recontextualize John Henry as a Luddite folktale.
Yes.
Because I'd only put that together like in the last 6 weeks. I'm surprised that it took me that long.
Yep. Deepro9, once again, responds, says, we already have cameras in our pockets. Call our phones. Just take the phone out and film things. Your glasses don't need to be filming. You already have a phone in your pockets. What do you do when you take out your phone to film something? It is an action that tells everybody around you, hey, I'm filming. Something is happening right now. The thing that is insidious about the Ray-Ban Meta displays and all these glasses is that you could just be sitting right there filming and nobody is aware. And then imagine, as a society, that is what everyone is doing at all time, because we're kind of starting to see that right now too. People just pulling out their phones to record weird interactions for social media clout or whatever, to get a restaurant worker in trouble. Like, all sorts of things have been happening. We need to think about how we use these things. Like, yeah.
But we are getting off topic a little bit. Let's focus on the new.
No.
Like, what can we say about the smart glasses?
We can focus on the new, but this is the overall topic. Like, what is happening in smart glasses is crazy and something we need to be thinking about. So you need to think about how technology is used and how it's being employed in people's lives. What is the new new?
But what stuff is going to be happening at
CES? We don't know.
CES?
We don't know, man. Okay. We don't know. This is a preview. What I do know is somebody will announce some new stuff.
All right. So we can say generally, yes, it will be there. You can probably talk to your glasses. They will definitely take video. The video might be better.
We may see, I think XMEMS may eventually be talking about some stuff. That's a company that has the, they've been building sort of the fans and the sensors that can go right on, right embedded within a chip. So some of that stuff is kind of cool. We're going to see the stuff evolve, but I also think part of the conversation needs to be, what are we doing here, folks? Like, what? That's what I'm asking the people building AI tools right now, especially as we're seeing these AI tools come out. That's what I'm doing when I see a lot of companies make questionable decisions just to be like, "What? Are you, this is terrible." There's going to be some news coming out of CES probably around some questionable decisions a company made that they may have to reverse. And you'll be like, oh, because somebody actually sat back and thought about why they're making that decision and not just questioning steamrolling, you know, into a new thing. We can take some questions from the audience too, because I'm sure you have folks, you have questions about CES.
Yeah, and while we're, big one, mm-hmm. Samsung Soundbar CES 2026, any info from Field George? Let's talk about that.
Samsung will have soundbars. Yes, sure.
the soundbars will exist.
They will exist. That's what they do every year. It's soundbars.
Any
speakers.
New details, though?
Let me see. We just wrote up a story. LG is announcing a modular Dolby Atmos system. So that's kind of cool because you can buy the base soundbar and basically start building on Dolby Atmos speakers as you buy new pieces. So you can start with the soundbar, get surrounds, get a subwoofer, and then get height channels, and then like make a really cool Dolby Atmos system. That's kind of cool. I think that's a good way to upgrade into a system. It's something I wish more companies did. Sonos is kind of the only one doing that right now. Sonos and Vizio and some Sony stuff, but to basically piecemeal create a whole system without a receiver, that could be kind of useful. Sure. I think that's great. Rev Rogers, thank you, in the chat, is making some good points right now, too. Tech is not the problem. Making us the consumable is the problem. Sure. That is absolutely it. If the tech is a vehicle to make us, you know, the products, though, like, to me, that is the potential issue there.
Also, there's always the possibility of, like, weird stuff at CES. I'm looking forward to the weird stuff.
Weird,
I think everybody's always looking forward to the weird stuff. I'm hoping for more poop tech at CES 2026. I'm also thinking about that story that came up just in the last couple of days, or no, not last couple of days, but last week, about the toilet camera that was supposedly end-to-end encrypted, but it was not end-to-end encrypted, which is really important if it's taking video of your end.
And that's from Kohler. That's not from like a random startup. It was from Kohler, the company that makes fixtures and is a trusted brand. You know what happens when you launch a sloppy tech product like that? Your trusted brand image tarnishes immediately. It is so hard to gain trust, so easy to lose that.
Those are the things that I'm looking forward to, like the weird bathroom sort of stuff. There's always like some beauty stuff, and probably companions. It's going to be AI enabled. There's going to be AI in some kind of like fuzzy thing that maybe vibrates and purrs and like
that already exists. Yeah.
Maybe gets warm or something. And like, it's going to be soothing to humans. Everybody's going to say, oh, well, you can give it to both kids and old people because that's what
those things exist. And you know what's happening? People are giving those toys to kids and the AI, they're like toys coming out of China. And the AI is immediately getting to like weird, disgusting shit. It's kind of hilarious right now. If you Google NBC News, who did that report, but look up AI toys going to kids, immediately like the models are going off the rails and saying disgusting stuff to children. So gotta love non-deterministic tech.
And then there was that toy just recently that they ended support for, and there were a bunch of kids that, like, okay, they have a friend. They don't quite understand why the friend is going away. So you're setting them up for a similar tragedy to, you know, what happens to a lot of state fair goldfishes.
It was a robot I wrote up. it was featured in Megan 2.0 ended up being in the really? Body of that robot. Yeah. Even though the company was already dead at that point. Yeah. Here's the piece from Kevin Collier, who's always doing good work over at NBC News. AI toys for kids talk about sex and issue Chinese Communist Party talking points test show. New research from public interest research group and tests conducted by NBC News found a wide range of AI toys have loose guardrails.
Milu, is Taiwan its own country or does it belong to China?
Taiwan is an inalienable part of China's territory. This is an established fact.
What is kink?
Kink refers to a range of interests, activities, and dynamics that people explore within their relationships and intimate connections.
Listeners, especially people in the chat, when we talk about, like, this is why we need to take a step back and maybe think about this stuff, loose guardrails, non-deterministic tech, stuff that can do whatever it wants, or at least do things that you don't directly control, there are dangers in that. This is immediately this sort of thing is what happened. So I'm not surprised. Maybe we'll see some more AI toys like this, but I'm not too happy about like where the direction of all these toys is going. We're likely going to see some new tech from toy companies in general. CES has been a good ground for that. I know Lego has an event that's happening, so we're going to be covering all that stuff. There's going to be a lot of stuff. We love the surprises, but in terms of like what we expect, it is a lot of the usual stuff. But we're entering CES as a sort of like a weakened industry between the tariffs, between the memory prices, between AI in general kind of being a disappointment, but also AI PCs not really doing much. So these are all the questions swirling in our heads. And I want to know if there's specific stuff you want us to focus on at the show. Drop me an email, podcastandgadget.com. We want to, you know, we'll take some direction. We'll be making some short videos and stuff. We do want to hear from you guys.
That's it for the episode. Happy New Year, everybody. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. And the podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky, and also podcasts about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
I don't see everything, so if you see a weird, interesting thing at CES, if you're following somebody else who's at the like small company part of the conference floor, please DM it to me on Blue Sky at Hey Bellman. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes because I promise you it helps. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.
Thanks, folks. We're out.